From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak. Pete Stoughton is out today. My guests this morning are Alyssa Ayton, who is the executive director of Park City Reads. She'll be joined by Molly Dillon, a parent of a dyslexic student who joins to tell her story. PC Reads recognizes, educates, and advocates for dyslexic students and provides support in our community through community education and school collaboration. Then I'll be joined by Dr. Kelly Woodward of the LiveWell Center at Intermountain Park City Hospital. He'll be joining to talk about what's going on there and also an upcoming lecture by Dr. Wendy Troxell, who many of us know here in the community as a sleep expert. And finally, award-winning children's book author and youth motivational speaker Ty Allen Jackson. He'll be joining to talk about his new book on kid entrepreneurs. Make Your Own Money is his new book. It's a lively, easy-to-read blueprint to these foundational skills. Imagine for a moment what it would be like if you struggled with reading. Often we only think about reading in association with our favorite book. However, reading is an integral part of our daily lives. We're going to talk about dyslexia this morning. Park City Reads, or PC Reads, joins me in the studio. They work to elevate literacy through early identification of struggling readers, effective reading interventions, and appropriate classroom accommodations. Alyssa Ayton and Molly Dillon join me in the studio. Good morning to both of you, and thanks for joining.
Good morning. Thanks for having us here today, Lynn.
Well, PC Reads has been very busy and since its founding in when? What year?
It was 2014 when we started basically meeting around a kitchen table, and then we received our nonprofit status in 2015.
Okay. So, you know, it's interesting to me that many adults now will say, you know, I'm pretty sure I'm dyslexic, but it was never identified. I just always thought I wasn't smart. And even now, with all this awareness around dyslexia, I know there are still issues with that early identification. How important is that?
Oh, it's crucial. I mean, I say it's crucial, but obviously identifying at any age is still important and worthwhile. But the earlier that we can identify and begin appropriate remediation, the more likely the child will become a strong, skilled reader, the more likely they won't suffer from poor confidence and self-esteem. So yes, we are huge advocates of identifying a child as young as possible.
So what percentage of kids out there will have some sort of issue with dyslexia? And then I know there are a whole other range of kind of things that go on when that make us not the best of readers.
Right. I'll start with this, and Molly might have more to add in on this. But basically, the statistics say that approximately up to one in five individuals are likely dyslexic. Many, like you said, may never be identified formally. If a parent is dyslexic, there's about a 50% chance that they'll have a child who's dyslexic. So if you do know that you're dyslexic, that's a great thing to be aware of and to start watching your child closely. And really, of struggling readers, probably 80% of them are dyslexic. Again, whether identified as specifically dyslexic or not, that is likely the reason for their struggles.
Molly, tell us your story of, well, your daughter, and then there's also a story about your son, but let's start with your daughter. And what did you see at those very early ages that made you know that something was up with reading?
Well, it's interesting because I have an unusual story within the dyslexia community. I was an early intervention, in an early intervention situation. So as Alyssa was just saying, it is one of those things that is a heritable trait. So knowing that it was a heritable trait within our family, I knew that in having children, I had a 50% chance that one of my children, I have two, might be dyslexic. So I worked with both children from day number one with skill set building and games that would encourage phonemic awareness. And when we say phonemic awareness, we are talking about the sounds that letters make. So B making the B sound. And it was easy for me to see that by 3 and a half, my daughter showed traits that she was at risk for having dyslexia. So I was fortunate that my mother-in-law was an educator, and she and I had had conversations around this subject. And so that was in 2014 when PC Reads started. So I reached out, but I was alone in the fact that there weren't people in the community that had identified their children with dyslexia in the preschool ages. So that was a little scary to have to go through those first years.
So tell me then, when you said your daughter exhibited traits, what are those traits? And how can you help other parents maybe see these at you know, 3 and a half? That's very early. And
it is.
Good going. Good for you.
So there are a number of traits that you can search for and look for and observe in a preschooler. And we have those listed on Park City Reads website. But just to name a few that my daughter exhibited would be things like her phonemic awareness, and it displayed in talking like somebody from Boston. So her R's were ah, so car was ka, or F was a very challenging word to pronounce, so it did not exhibit at all in her spoken language. So her brother Finn was in for years and years and years. TH was a challenge. Other letters in the alphabet were a challenge. Five letters of the alphabet never exhibited when she sang the alphabet until third grade. Understanding the difference between yesterday, today, and tomorrow was a challenge. Directional things were a challenge. Identifying colors were a challenge. So letter identification when the letters were small rather than capital was very challenging in the areas of P, D, P, Q, U, and N. So we worked on capital letters rather than lowercase letters to create a strong foundation in that area first before tackling the next area.
I think you get Mother of the Year Award.
I agree.
It's really amazing. So all these different things that you bring up, like colors and directions, and they seem like they're not really connected. But what we know is dyslexia is a neurological condition. Alyssa, can you tell us more?
Yes. You know, I actually brought the official definition because I thought that might be good to read, and I don't always get it exactly correctly without reading it. So the official definition is dyslexia is characterized by difficulties with accurate or fluent word recognition, by poor spelling and decoding abilities. The difficulties typically result from a deficit in the phonological component, which is what Molly was just referring to, of language, and it's unexpected in relation to other cognitive abilities and the provision of effective classroom instruction. So, you know, you really want to ensure that a child is receiving effective reading instruction in their classroom so that you can identify the children that are struggling because of something like dyslexia versus poor instruction.
Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, in such a great school district like Park City School District, we still find kids not having their dyslexia identified until they're in high school. And I'm thinking of Joseph Morelli, who is no longer with us, but who the Joseph James Morelli Foundation was started in memory of. And I know that he, his mom Barbara talks a lot about how it wasn't recognized until he was in high school, and he now would be in his sort of late 20s, but that seems very late. Like, we have known about dyslexia. Why so late?
Oh, that's a very, there's a lot of reasons. So I'll tell you my story too, because my story is a little different than Molly's, in that our daughter, it was clear to me that she was struggling in early elementary school. But at that time in our district, dyslexia wasn't really talked about. There was some misinformation as to whether teachers could use the word or not and how to use the word. And really, the rule is that they can say that there's characteristics of dyslexia. A teacher can't diagnose, so they can't say to a parent, your child has dyslexia. They also can't say your child doesn't have dyslexia. But until they're aware of the characteristics to look for, the teachers really didn't know. They didn't have the information to be able to have that conversation effectively with a parent. And in our situation, it was third grade for us when I finally was like, I'm sure my daughter is struggling. She seems bright enough to be able to learn to read. What's going on here? And it was talking to other parents who said to me, she seems to have the signs of dyslexia. And I thought, you know, I didn't really know much about it at the time. So really, I'm kind of meandering around this here because there's so many different paths to identification. But that is why we are trying to educate both parents and teachers about the signs to look for at a young age and even up through, because we do have and we do receive family phone calls from families with older children who are very bright students who have managed to cope. They have amazing coping skills that have enabled them to move through the school system for a number of years until the workload gets too heavy and the reading piles up so much that they're unable to keep up.
What about evaluation and diagnostic sort of tests early on? What did your daughter get once you realized?
So when we realized it, the school at the time did not assess her. We went a private route, and we had an educational psychologist do an assessment for her and was able to receive a diagnosis that she was dyslexic. Now, and the way, there's basically the route of going through an assessment through the school to see if you qualify for special education services, or to go a private evaluation, which would result in a diagnosis if it exists. And
okay, so when you said something about special education, mm-hmm. it made me think about, well, this whole question of self-esteem and confidence and intelligence. I believe this is true, and you can confirm, there is zero connection between dyslexia and lower IQ or anything like that.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
Okay. And so it's so important because kids get that feeling that they're not smart when they have, you know, there's so much surrounding reading. I remember, and I don't know if it was like this for you when you were young, but in elementary school, you were placed in a math group, high or low, depending on how you read aloud. You know, it was like reading aloud determined everything in early elementary. Of course, I was in elementary school a really long time ago, so hopefully it's not that case now. But Molly, talk a little bit about that and what your daughter experienced.
It is a challenge, and I think that you brought up a great point, which is IQ can be quite high in some of the people that have dyslexia or struggle with reading. And we talk about dyslexia as being an unexpected difficulty with reading, meaning it's a bright child who shows all the indications that they have the ability to learn the information provided to them within the school system or within their classroom. And there is an unexpected result of struggling in the area of reading. And with my daughter, I would say that she has had those moments where she has come home frustrated or with low self-esteem or challenged with the fact that she's not performing at the level of her peers, but yet she knows that she can. So over the course of her school years, we have seen her flourish working with her amazing teachers. We have amazing teachers in the district who collaborate with us as parents and encourage them in areas that they have strengths within the classroom. She's top of her class in math, and she's top of her class in reading now. But it took a long time to get there and to share with her that she had the brain and the capacity to take the information. And while she might learn differently than someone who's sitting in the chair next to her, that she still had the capacity to do it. She had a bright brain, a unique brain, a neurodiverse brain that she could share with the world and share the way that she views the world outside of the box and in a 3D visual way, which a lot of dyslexics have that capacity to do. So she is able to look at problem solving from a different aspect than maybe the person sitting next to her.
I love to hear that.
And I think that leads right into one of our programs for youth, which is set up to provide them the opportunity to improve their self-advocacy and self-esteem, which is our MIND program. So MIND is open to any student in the Park City area, K through 12, with a learning difference. It doesn't have to be dyslexia. We have some students who come with ADHD or anxiety. I would say the majority are dyslexic or struggling readers. And we get them together so that they can meet other students like themselves. They can learn how to self-advocate for themselves. They can even just share stories about, like you just mentioned, sometimes they are made fun of in class when they're reading aloud or they can't retrieve the right word at the right time. And so this program meets 4 times a year to really help all those students feel good about themselves and know that they're not alone.
That's great. My question is about, well, first of all, this is another generalization that I have observed knowing people, whether young or, you know, older, who are dyslexic. They all do seem to be very good in math. So tell me how much of an over-stereotyping that is. I mean, because you sort of mentioned it, Molly, and your daughter.
There are some, and I think, but it's actually, there's not necessarily a correlation there or a connection. Dyslexic students will have strengths in different areas, right? Reading is their weakness, and some might be strong in science, some might be strong in art, they might be strong in music, and then there are some that are strong in math. There are also some that have the coexisting disability of dyscalculia, which means that they struggle not just with math or reading, but also with math. So, I don't think there's statistics that back up that there's a direct correlation there, but it does exist.
I'm speaking with Alyssa Ayton. She's the executive director of PC Reads, along with Molly Dillon, who is also involved in PC Reads. How many families and or students do you have involved right now?
Over the years, we have assisted over 200 families in the Park City area, either through our Advocate program or our MIND program. And then because our events are open up to the community, we do have additional families that come to events.
Well, the teachers in this district must just think you are angels because, as we know, teachers are overloaded with the chores and the tasks that they already have. Mm-hmm. And to have you come in and to help them collaborate, if there is a parent right now of a young person who's listening and saying, I wonder, what advice do you have for them?
So I am not only the parent of a child with dyslexia, but I also am the advocate program manager for PC Reads. So in that capacity, we are able to support those parents that might be looking at a student or their child and saying, I'm seeing something here that might indicate my child is a struggling reader. In that case, they can go on to our website at Park City Reads and just click on the button there that's right there on the front page that asks for more resources. Mm-hmm. And as an advocate for students with dyslexia, we're able to offer resources like tutors, we're able to sit in on IEP and 504 meetings, we're able to collaborate with the school, talk with the teachers, and assist the parents through those from the initial steps all the way through to the time when they're entering into college. And it's an exciting thing to be able to walk beside our parents and walk with our teachers in that process because we're seeing a lot of change and a stronger community, and that is where we see better health in our mental areas with our children, creating higher confidence and self-esteem. Mm-hmm.
What great work are doing. PC Reads, the website is parkcityreads.org, correct?
Yes, or just pcreads.org.
Okay. And you are an official nonprofit?
Yes, we are, which means we are participating in Live PC, Give PC this year. And we would just like to say a thank you to all of the individuals and organizations in town that have supported us over this year. And we look forward to next Friday's community celebration.
Excellent. Alyssa Ayton and Molly Dillon, thank you so much for joining me this morning. It's really, as I said, great work that you're doing.
Thank you very much, Lynn.
Thank you.
Joining me in the studio is Dr. Kelly Woodward. He is the medical director at the Live Well Center at Intermountain Park City Hospital. Among other things, he's joining me to talk about a lecture series coming up on November 9th. We know that Kelly is himself a sleep expert, but we have another renowned sleep expert in town, Dr. Wendy Troxell. So, Dr. Woodward, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me. This is really exciting to be reintroducing our community lecture series. And for those who don't know, this is a series of presentations by health experts on topics relevant to our community, and it's free to the public. Yeah, this event on November 9th, Tuesday, November 9th, by Dr. Troxell, who again, as you said, is a very prominent sleep researcher and author, will be on this very fascinating topic of sleep and how people can optimize their own sleep and know the health benefits of good sleep. She's going to be addressing a really intriguing aspect of sleep that is rarely discussed, and that is the dynamics of sleep among couples who share the same bed. And the importance of how each person can optimize their own sleep while actually improving your relationship. Mm. A very intriguing topic. So
that is. So it's more than just having a major king-size bed.
Correct. Absolutely. And it's very, this is a very interesting topic. People are going to find it potentially life-changing to hear from her about this. So again, it's free to the public. We do ask that people register. We have limited in-person attendance at the Blair Education Center at the Park City Hospital, and we also have online attendance as an option. People should register by going to our website, livewellcenter.org/Park City, and click on classes and events, and register for either in-person or online attendance.
So is this the first of the series that's sort of coming back post-COVID?
Exactly.
Or
right.
I shouldn't say post-COVID, but
at this point, at this point, yes. Yeah, exactly. We're going to be doing this, or typically our cadence has been around quarterly through the year, and so this is our kickoff, and again, it's going to be a real blockbuster.
Again, November 9th, that's a Tuesday, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Live Well Center in the Blair Education Center. So what is your protocol for safety, masks required, I would assume.
Correct. Masks are required in all Intermountain facilities, including this. And we will also have accommodation for considerable spacing. So that's why we have limited in-person attendance to 90 people, but very big capacity for those who want to attend online.
I want to say that I realized here at KPCW just how famous Dr. Wendy Troxell is as a local resident, but she comes in here from time to time to use our studios as a national guest on NPR or whatever it is. And so she's it made me realize she's really big time, and it's great that she's kicking this lecture series off. I know you are also a sleep expert. Oftentimes when I interview you, we talk about all these other things, and then at the end I say, wait a minute, we didn't talk about sleep. So let's talk about sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't want to steal all of Dr. Troxell's thunder, and certainly can't match her expertise, and she's very generous to be our kickoff presenter. But sleep, its impact on our health is so huge. I think I like to say that when you're investing in your health, sleep is one of those things you have to kind of write the check. 7.5 to 8 hours of your life, you just got to dedicate it to sleep, and then you have to optimize your sleep to get the health benefits. The downsides of inadequate sleep can be many, many negative impacts on health, everything from obesity, diabetes, depression, high blood pressure, even dementia is impacted by inadequate sleep. So, and people can, with some attention to sleep and sometimes with a little bit of help professionally, can achieve optimum sleep, but everybody has to kind of write the check.
Mm-hmm. Write the check. It's interesting to me that most everything we do in our lives sort of contributes to not getting a good night of sleep. You know, we start off with drinking coffee, which, I'm just someone who I'll give up everything else, but I won't give up my coffee. But, on those times that I have given it up for a couple of weeks, guess what? I sleep so much better. Then there's alcohol, then there's stress, and there's screen time, and exactly. All these things take away from our sleep and make us at bedtime say, oh, let's see, where's my melatonin or where's my whatever
right.
it is.
Right. And so a lot of it's coming down to now, and I think Dr. Troxell will touch on this a bit, is this really powerful understanding now of how much sleep is kind of immutable in our physiology. And it's linked to our circadian rhythm and the sun and all that. So all of our artificiality of being able to stay awake all night, and yes, some people do need to, you know, be on the job in the middle of the night, but the rest of us have to follow your physiology. That is, you go to bed early and you'll set yourself up for good sleep, minimize distractions, not too much bright light and too much action motion on screens. And then after that, it's other things to optimize your sleep, which she will talk about in great detail.
Well, that's going to be very interesting. And again, it's November 9th. It's a Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. You can register online. There is limited seating, of course, because we're practicing distancing. You can also watch it online. How do you do that? Do you have to register as well and get the link?
Yes, if you go to the website livewellcenter.org/Park City and then go to the classes and events, and there is a link there specifically for the online participation, which will take you through the process to get that set up.
And Dr. Troxell, I know she was quite involved in talk, and I guess it never came to fruition, but in the school district, about changing school start time. She was a big advocate for that. So a lot of what she has talked about in the community is sleep among young people. Again, this one is about couples. And I really like that idea. It's interesting. It's kind of like how we talk about the weather, but every morning, I don't know how you are, Dr. Woodward, but my husband and I say, how'd you sleep? You know, it's like, like, why is this a conversation?
Yeah.
And it's because of the importance, I suppose.
Right, exactly. And we feel it, right? And it kind of sets the tone for our day as well as for our long-term and near-term health. So you're right. It's, it's about a third of our lives, and we've got to give it that attention,
mm-hmm.
right? The same attention we give to the other two-thirds.
Yeah, absolutely. Good point. Tell us a little bit more about what's happening at the Live Well Center. Last I heard, you were going to hire someone else for women's health. Has that happened yet?
That's in motion, and we're optimistic that that's going to, come to fruition in the months ahead. Don't have, enough details to invite people to, start calling for that. But yeah, we are going to be having building on our integrative medicine approach, which is bringing in all modalities to help people live their healthiest lives possible, including that integrates with usual healthcare that people are familiar with our exercise programs, nutrition, stress management, massage, acupuncture, and then issues of hormone management and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. You're very busy out there at the Live Well Center. I know this because, full disclosure, you are my doctor, and I have a very hard time getting in to see you. Is this just because of the popularity of what the Live Well Center is bringing to the community? Does it have to do with the fact that we put off these appointments?
It's a little bit of both, actually. So it's we're glad to say that it's people are recognizing that getting some help to address for those who need it, better exercise, better nutrition, other things to help manage chronic conditions is so powerful for health, and we're excited and very glad to be trying to get people the help they need, as well as this little bit of shift of pent-up need for various healthcare just routine healthcare. So it's a combination of both. But we love the excitement around the lifestyle things that people are recognizing are so powerful for health. And by the way, more powerful than any prescription I could ever write for anybody is the things you do for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm speaking with Dr. Kelly Woodward. He's the medical director at the Live Well Center at Park City Hospital. A couple months ago, Dr. Woodward, we had Marlene Hatch on, who runs the physical therapy side. But it seems that not only are you close geographically, you're adjacent to each other in the hospital, but you work a lot along with Dr. Max Testa, that has the whole program for sort of exercise and fitness. How does it all work together?
Well, I guess the short answer is beautifully, but the longer answer is, it's amazing, right? The continuum of of our health needs. So physical therapy will often help people recover from illness or injury or surgery, or help them prepare for surgery and work on biomechanics and that sort of thing. And then when they transition to a maintenance exercise, you know, that's where our exercise team comes in. And then beyond that is for the sports performance angle, for people who are athletes, both, you know, weekend athletes and up all the way to professionals, but, you know, certainly focusing on the amateur everyday folks mm-hmm. who want to address sports medicine issues of, but also their personal performance, how your heart, your lungs, muscles and joints all work together in your athletic endeavors. That's the sports performance side. It's really all kind of a continuum.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nutrition in there and sleep and all that stuff.
Right. Looking at the whole person, it seems so basic. And yet for so many decades, it seemed like medicine was, you know, you went to a specialist and that's all they did. And now this whole notion of holistic and functional medicine, I was wondering, you know, about those definitions, about functional medicine or holistic. What do you say you practice?
So I call my practice, we call my practice lifestyle medicine, lifestyle-oriented primary care. So it's about, certainly I acknowledge that, and I'm happy to help people, we're happy to help people who have a variety of all the chronic conditions and acute conditions that people can have. And those are very real things, injuries and illnesses, you know, they are real things. And so people need help with that, but you also need to, people also need to fundamentally and always address the lifestyle things. Again, it's exercise, nutrition, sleep, how you manage stress. Because if you're not doing that too, it kind of isn't enough to take a pill for a condition. You have to have the whole picture. And so my emphasis is always to start and end with the lifestyle issues.
Very good. Dr. Kelly Woodward is joining me here in the studio to talk about everything going on at the Live Well Center at Intermountain Park City Hospital, and also the upcoming lecture series on November 9th with Dr. Wendy Troxell, who is an internationally known sleep expert. She happens to be a Park City resident. And Dr. Woodward, I'm so glad you could join me this morning, and best of luck with everything you have going on out there. Let's see, again, can you tell us how to register for Dr. Troxell's lecture series?
Yes. Please go to our website at livewellcenter.org/Park City and go to the link for classes and events, and there you'll see the options to attend by in person or online, and we look forward to seeing everyone there.
Excellent. Dr. Kelly Woodward, Medical Director at the Live Well Center. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Now, we welcome an expert on helping young people find their way. This time, it's in entrepreneurship. Now, it's never too early to start building the foundations of how to make your own money. And yet, few reliable resources for financial literacy and entrepreneurship are available for kids as young as 8 to 14. Ty Allen Jackson is my guest, and his new book, Make Your Own Money, is a lively, easy-to-read blueprint to these foundational skills. He is an award-winning children's book author and youth motivational speaker. Ty Allen Jackson, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Hey, Lynn, thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Well, it is an honor to have you. Your book is so great. I couldn't stop reading it, even though my days as a young entrepreneur have long since passed me by. I wish I had, and my kids are in their 20s now, I wish I had this book for when they were young. Why should we be young entrepreneurs, and how did you become one?
You know what? We should be young entrepreneurs specifically by what you just said. I wish I had this book for my kids when they were younger, or what many parents say, I wish I had this book when I was a kid. And you got to ask yourself why. And the answer is because we all know today the power of money. We all know that the amazing tool that it is today. And perhaps if we learned about it a little sooner, perhaps we would be a little bit more savvier about it, and our lifestyle might be a little different. So imagine if you did have this book when you was a child, how it would empower you, how would it teach you, how would it mold you to become maybe and point you in a completely different direction. You know, maybe it gives you an opportunity to become an entrepreneur or save a lot more money away for you to, you know, to travel more, whatever the case is. So, you know, I created this money because I want this to be the tool that many of us didn't have when we were kids, so that it could help them, our children, become the best versions of themselves.
It seems to me recently, Ty, that kids are so busy, at least in our community here. I see them working less and less and doing more sports and more, you know, things that will make their CV or their resume for college look really good. So maybe they're doing internships, which is great. That's working. But it seems to me that a lot of kids get out of college and they really haven't had a job before, ever. Is that a trend, or am I just kind of making that up through my own anecdotal experience?
You know, I don't dismiss what you're saying. I'm in the environment which I live. There are a lot of kids out here that are hustling and making their own money, my kids included. You know, I think it speaks geographically wherever it is that you live. Some kids may have an opportunity not to work and not to have that life experience. And I think regardless of where you are on the financial scale, I think it really does matter to get your kids involved in some form of employment or entrepreneurship as early as possible for the reason that you just mentioned. Kids are walking out of school, walking out of college, and not really having that life experience of what it means to earn your own money, to be part of a team, to understand the infrastructure and the economy and business. And so I think while your point may be valid, I think it's up to us as parents and guardians to guide our children in a more advantageous direction when it comes to their future, especially when it revolves finance, entrepreneurship, and employment.
Yes. If you're just joining me on The Mountain Life, I'm speaking with Ty Allen Jackson. He's an award-winning children's book author and youth motivational speaker. He's joining to talk about his new book, Make Your Own Money. And Ty, I just wanted to mention the point that you make is great. I also think that as a community, we need to embrace kid entrepreneurs. I will say that I have seen quite often on something like a platform like Nextdoor, where it's a kid saying, hey, I'm so-and-so and I'm 15 years old and I will do, you know, yard work, I'll do, you know, and then they come up with this list of things that they will do. And I love that. And I hope that people in the community support that. You know, we oftentimes have our landscaping service or whatever it is, you know, it's a contract, so we can't get some kid to come and mow our lawn. But tell us why we should.
Yeah, I think it's incredibly important that we support our young people and over-support them. And I think we have the power of, as adults, with cell phones, to be able to share via our social media. Whenever someone opens up a lemonade stand in my neighborhood, because my community know that I kind of have this niche of promoting young entrepreneurs, they post it and they tag me on it so that I can in turn tag it and share it amongst my friends and followers, so that we'll go and patronize these kids and giving them the it's courageous for kids to get out there and have their own lemonade stand or rake leaves or mow lawns or wash cars. It takes a tremendous amount of courage. And the least we can do as parents and citizens is to give them a attaboy or attagirl and obviously monetarily support them as well. It's kind of the foundation of, you know, a character like Danny Dollar, who has this vision of being really successful. Well, that kind of starts now. And so the sooner that we can do this to our young people, the sooner that we're going to, you know, cultivate our kids into being forward-thinking, prosperous citizens.
The book is Make Your Own Money, and the tagline is How Kids Can Earn It, Save It, Spend It, and Dream Big. And yes, we must talk about Danny Dollar. Danny is your fictional character, otherwise known as the King of Cha-Ching. And there's some great illustrations.
I love how you said that. What a recording. That's great. Nice job out of here.
Oh, well, thank you. It's illustrated by Nicole Miles, and the illustrations are excellent. One of the first illustrations in the book is Danny with his box full of cups and paraphernalia that he will make lemonade out of, and he's got a stand, Danny's lemonade stand with some fresh lemons, and then really the illustrations are just fantastic. What is your age, your target age for this book?
I like to think that the book is targeted for kids, a kind of 8 to 12, but I think you can look in either direction of those ages, and maybe kids who are 6 years old, I think, can appreciate it, as well as going up to 14 years old to be able to, like, utilize this book for the tool that it is to empower them to help make their own money. But because it really is also about financial literacy, and let's face it, we're kind of in a culture and a society where financial literacy isn't taught prominently, not just in schools, but also not in the home, I think that there is no age limit to the people who can receive financial literacy knowledge. About this book, I think the book is special that way. That while it may have an age range of elementary to middle school, I think because of its topic, that it really is boundless when it comes to age.
Have you heard?
And it's fun.
Yes, it is fun, especially the way you make it sound. You do start off the book telling a story about your Uncle Earl, who would come over to your house to watch football on Sundays, and he would always come with a $5 bill, which you liked, but then it wasn't just about giving you money. What was it about?
Yeah, it was about, he says that he gives Danny the $5, and Danny's like, well, Uncle Earl says make it grow, and Danny's like, well, you want me to put it in the ground and water it? Like, what do you mean, Uncle Earl? And he changes Danny's life by saying, Danny, you can become an entrepreneur now and make your money grow. You just need the courage and the plan. And from that point, he called him Dan the Man with a Plan. And from that moment on, Danny Dollar was inspired to make his money grow and to teach kids along the way how they can make money and make it grow. And I think it goes back to what you just said a little while ago about us supporting the children of our community, the same way that Uncle Earl supports Danny. We all need that kind of encouragement to be able to, like, make kids realize that they are just this tremendous catalyst of change, and to not just, to change their lives and give them a sense of self-awareness and self-worth, and to let them know that they can do absolutely anything. And Danny is kind of a role model to help kids do just that.
Down near Zion National Park in southern Utah last spring, I was just coming off a bike ride. It was hot. We were thirsty. There was a lemonade stand, and we stopped there, and it was a young girl about 12 years old and her younger brother, and we bought all kinds of cookies and lemonade from them. And she explained to us how she was going to use the money in part to donate to, and I'm forgetting what sort of movement or charity it was, but she had planned to donate. She was raising money for that, which of course ended up with, the result was that we probably gave her an extra 20 or 30 bucks because her story was amazing. This is something you talk about in the book too, is, raising money, but also donating money. Can you talk about that?
I think what really matters with money is that kids see money very myopically. Like, it's something that I use to spend. And I think what Danny showcases is that it's not a tool solely for spending. It's a tool for saving. And it's also a tool for empowering your community. It's a lot easier for you to make a difference in a person's life if you have money versus not having money. And it matters to Danny that he not only helps with his business, himself and his family, but he helps his community better because he knows a better community also makes for a better Danny. And whether it's a local community or even a global community, he realized that that's important. And we all have a soft place in our heart, you know, for whether it's, you know, the Humane Society for Animals or PETA for Animals or, you know, the Red Cross or homeless shelters. We all have a place in our heart for something outside of us. And to be able to support those places monetarily really matters. Not to mention you can get the right amount from your taxes when you get older. So, like, you know, so there's a lot of different components to being able to donate money, in addition to showcasing kids that money is this amazing tool that you get to do so many different things with. It's not just to buy a pair of Jordans. It's also to invest for your future and to make the future brighter and better for those around you.
Just want to mention that in your book, Make Your Own Money, there are 5 chapters. You start off by talking about what money is, and then how to earn it, and then how to save it, then how to spend it. And then the last chapter is Dream Big. And you have Danny's list of stuff to do to dream big and kick butt in whatever you want to kick butt in. Okay, I like that. So what is, give us a preview or a sneak peek into what that list is. What's the stuff we need to do as children?
Yeah, first of all, I acknowledge that kids ask the most important question in the history of questions. And that question is why? Kids are always asking why something is the way that it is. And that's the essence of curiosity, of knowing why something is the way it is, and perhaps being able to change it. Because when you're an adult, you've heard why so much, like you start to just figure, like, you can't do anything, or you've been told no that you can't do something, that you start losing that sense of objectivity and creativity. So one of the dream big aspects is to always ask why and why not, and realize that, you know, you can be a catalyst for change. Another thing that I suggest kids to do is to go out and play. Going out and playing may not seem to be something that helps lay down a foundation of success, but if you break it down, it really is. When you go out and play, strategy might be involved. Teamwork and team building is involved. It's also a way to kind of have a form of escapism if things are heavy on your mind. So it's important to go out and play. In addition to setting goals, talking positive to yourself, you know, to be able to say, like Danny always calls himself, the king of cha-ching. You know, having that little tagline for himself is a sense of empowerment. You know, you know, when you look in the mirror, the words that you say to yourself are just great affirmations of who you are and who you will become. So, you know, for little kids to be able to look at themselves and say, I am, and then just fill in the blanks, you know, I think is really important. And one of the last things that he emphasizes is failure. Like, failure is just a part of success. It's not the opposite of success. Every single person fails, but we can use failure as a tool to actually build us and make us stronger.
There are 2 things that just jump out at me that a lot of adults still don't seem to know. And one of those is make a business plan. And the other one is what's the problem with debt? And it's funny that really, you know, we as a society, there is so much debt. How do you teach a child about, I mean, you know, most of us, if we own a home, we have some debt because we have a mortgage. But I sense that you're talking about things like credit card debt. How do you tell kids don't go there?
Yeah, I think it's important for Danny. Danny's a visionary, and Danny sees towards the future. And, you know, you eat a cheeseburger now, and that cheeseburger might taste good, but it might not feel good an hour or two later. It's kind of, debt is kind of the same way. When you buy that video game or that expensive thing, it may seem like it feels good in the moment, but later on, you're going to realize you've got to chunk up some change for that. And if interest is involved, you're going to chunk up a lot more change that you could use in a different way. So I think it's important for that Danny showcases that sense of vision, that, you know, buying this expensive thing might feel really good right now, but it's going to put you in a hole that you're going to feel really, really difficult in once you get there. And I think having a sense of forward thinking and being a visionary kind of will set the tone for kids, like, yeah, like, you know, maybe I don't need that, you know, $300 t-shirt today, because if I took that same $300 and invested it in, you know, Google, you know, I could actually make substantially more money. And while that $300 t-shirt will be, you know, thrown in the garbage by that point. So, you know, I think it's just a matter of, again, having this role model that showcases being a visionary.
The book is Make Your Own Money, How Kids Can Earn It, Save It, Spend It, and Dream Big with Danny Dollar, the king of cha-ching. And my guest is Ty Allen Jackson. Thanks so much for joining me on The Mountain Life, Ty. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for making me chuckle. You're awesome. Thank you.
And thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life here on KPCW Park City.